Welcome to the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. I am Pat Boyle. On this episode, we recap a hectic trade deadline day where the Blackhawks made four trades to bring their deadline total to six moves. They dealt Janmark, Soderberg, Highmore, and Bowie on Monday. We'll let you know who they received in return and the draft picks that they got. Steve Conroy and Jamal Mayers will break it all down. And why Stan Bowman made the right call looking big picture at this trade deadline. A little bit later on, Charlie Romeliotis joins me to recap a wild regular season finale between the Blackhawks and Blue Jackets, where some recent acquisition played huge roles in the Blackhawks' 4-3 overtime victory. It's all coming up on the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Coors Light.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
All right, guys, the Hawks make four separate deals on trade deadline day. They send Matthias Janmark and a fifth-round pick to Vegas for a second-round pick this year and a third-round selection next year. Carl Soderberg was sent to Colorado for Josh Dickinson and the rights to Notre Damer Ryder Rolston. Matthew Highmore went to Vancouver for center Adam Gaudette. And in a separate deal with the Canucks, the Hawks pick up a fourth-round pick in exchange for Madison Bowie and a fifth-round selection. Let's start with Janmark. When you look at the climate going up to the trade deadline and you look at how other deals went down, and there weren't a lot of first-round picks that were thrown around, like Taylor Hall you would have thought might be in that mix, although he had no trade clause, so someone might have had a better offer than Boston, and it just became a second rounder. That being said, I don't think you could ask for any more than a second rounder, and which turned into a third rounder for Janmark, whose stock is probably never going to be as high as it is than right now, right?
You know, what it tells me, Pat, is that a team like the Vegas Golden Knights knew what they wanted, and they were going to pay any price to get it. Not, you know, a second and a third round pick for a Matthias Janmark is extremely high, but
in a rental situation too, right?
Yeah, I mean, an unrestricted free agent, so he's not guaranteed to be there after this season is over for Vegas. But what it tells me is they really liked what they saw. They had a six-game series against the Dallas Stars last year in the bubble in Dallas. And I'm sorry, in Edmonton. And they played the Dallas Stars. And, you know, I looked at the numbers for Janmark, and he was getting 13, 14, 15 minutes a night. For a third line player, that's pretty good. You know, you're getting out there every four shifts on a pretty regular shift. He's a great penalty killer, and they thought they were lacking that in the playoffs, so they went after him. And I agree, it was a huge haul by general manager Stan Bowman to get a second and a third for a guy who probably wasn't going to be past his expiring contract, Jeremy.
Yeah, and what I really like about it, even big picture, is that it takes a lot of discipline. And so for Stan and his staff not to get too excited about the fact that this team is only 4 points out of a playoff spot, but to have the discipline to stay the course in regard to the whatever it is, 4 or 5 year plan, to move these assets and to acquire draft picks, which is the only way to build a perennial winner in today's NHL and a cap world. So, you know, good on Stan and his staff for, you know, taking the appropriate time. Stan typically likes to get ahead of the market. And I think when you are the seller, you have to wait till the end till you get the best deal possible. And that's what he did in this case.
And You know, one thing I want to point out, and Stan brought it up when we spoke to him on Monday after the deals went down, was Janmark was critical for kind of setting the foundation of how Jeremy wanted to play with this young team this year. You know, we talked in the off season about work ethic, and you're going to have to outwork your opponent, not outskill them. I thought it was nice to have, you know, some veterans in here like a Matthias Janmark play the 200-foot game, be on the penalty kill. He came here because he wanted to show that he's got offensive upside, and he did show that. And so, you know, kudos to, like, it was a smart deal all the way around, right? You got him for next to nothing. He instilled a work ethic and a way to go about your business here for the younger guys. They followed his lead. And then you're able, you know, to see some of these younger guys like, okay, he could probably take Janmark's spot. It's not the, you know, he only had 1 point over the last 10 games. It's not the end of the world if all of a sudden Janmark's not a part of the equation. And then you get an opportunity to add to your team with those draft picks. So, like, all in all, like, you get the decision to acquire him, and then you also understand why they decided to part ways.
Yeah, you know, Stan talked about the importance of that north-south game that he brought, and that's, you know, when you think of Janmark, that's what you think about. Just getting the puck out of danger, lugging it down the ice, getting it deep, and then trying to get it back. And, you know, real strong in his skates, and that stuff rubs off on the younger guys. And, you know, not everyone can play like Patrick Kane or an Alex DeBrincat. You need other role models, and I think he was a perfect role model for a guy like Kurashev or a guy like Hagel. I think Hagel plays that way anyway, but to see a guy who's been in the NHL for as long as Janmark and to play that heavy north-south game, I think that's what head coach Jeremy Calton really appreciated about him.
Yeah, he brought that bottom six mentality, straight lines, played linear, held onto the puck, was hard to play against. Had nothing to do with physicality. Let's be clear here. What I'm talking about hard on the puck, it means winning your puck battles, coming up with pucks. He was good in all those areas. And then what he did add that he wasn't able to do in Dallas was an opportunity. Opportunity on the power play. Opportunity here and there playing 4-on-4. Opportunity late in games. Offensive situations. And he has the skill to contribute in that respect, especially on a team like the Hawks. So he was a perfect fit for this group. I think he set the foundation and the template and he was a great example for how they have to play. And good on Stan for recognizing that, bringing him in. And a lot of these young guys looked to him, I'm sure, and saw him playing in the finals and were like, let's follow this guy.
Okay, do you guys remember after the bubble last year, after the Hawks beat the Oilers and then lose to the Vegas Golden Knights in the first round, the praise for Matthew Highmore? Do you remember that? I mean, he had a really, really good showing in the bubble. And, you know, Jeremy used him as an example of, like, how he wanted to see this team this year play, where you're setting up the next shift, whatever. But as this season started, he was quickly... It was clear he was going to be this 13th forward situation where he's in the lineup once in a while. He'd have a couple nights off, back in the lineup, whatever. Not a lot of offensive upside, but, you know, like you know, Hagel is Highmore plus or something like that if you look at the current roster. So you get an opportunity to move him to Vancouver for a right-handed centerman, which you don't have a lot of right-handers, you know, that's been a problem, you know, throughout the season so far. A former Hobie Baker winner in 2018, so the offensive upside is appreciably higher than Highmore in Adam Gaudette. So what did you think of that move? Jammer, start with you.
Yeah, I like the move, you know, and listen, I'm not trying to disrespect Highmore. I think you've seen the maximum you're going to get out of Highmore. His upside, we've seen it. I think that's who he is as a player, and that's his ceiling. That's just my evaluation of him as a player. Nothing wrong with that. He could have a fine career doing that. Now, you take a look at Gaudette and what his resume says and what he can do, and the opportunity that he was given in Vancouver, fell out of a favor, was no longer playing center, is now playing the wing, was not in the top six. Listen, skill guys need to be put in a situation to have success. They're not going to have success playing in the bottom five positions and not getting power play time. Their confidence is going to go down the drain. They're not going to want the puck to make plays. They're not going to be a confident player. Confident players create points. If you want guys to create points, they have to want the puck, and they have to be willing and live with some of the mistakes that they're going to make. Gaudette's going to get every opportunity here to do that, and he has the skills to prove it.
Yeah, he's not that far removed from, you know, scoring 12 goals and 21 assists in just 56 games. So that's roughly 50, 51, 52 point per regular season. And, you know, those types of players are hard to come by. Now, this year wasn't the same for him, and, you know, he'd had a little bit of a drop off, but I think he's very capable of getting back to that. And keep in mind too, like, he's an American-born kid. I think he's from the East Coast, so now he's going to be moving halfway across the country. He's going to be in the States. You know, family might be able to come out and visit him a little more. He's going to be a little more comfortable. Sometimes a change of scenery like that is really good, and it can really inspire a guy. So let's hope that's the case. And I think, hey, listen, I love Highmore too. And you mentioned the playoffs. I think he scored a key goal against Vegas at one point. It was really good against the Edmonton Oilers,
I think,
too.
He had 4 points in nine games, if I recall.
I think you're right. But, you know, we hope him, we wish him the best, but I agree with Jammer. We know what his upside is, and he'd reached it. Gaudette, you know, put him with a couple players like a Patrick Kane. Let's see what happens.
As for Gaudette, the one caveat to his situation, obviously we know what has gone on with Vancouver with the 21, 23 players that were in COVID. They're going to return to action later this week. There were some reports that Gaudette was, that his symptoms were, you know, something that he had to really deal with, and it hit him hard. I asked Stan Bowman about that on our conference call earlier on Monday, and he didn't really want to get into the health status, but, you know, he said he was excited to come here. So I don't know how quickly Gaudette's going to be able to, you know, be a part of the Blackhawks equation. I don't think it's going to happen as quickly as it did for Stillman and for Connolly, but you know, we could see him in the next week or so, depending on where his health is at. Carl Soderberg would not have been a part of this team had Kirby Dach not gone down in the World Juniors and the Taves situation occurred. He was an insurance policy for that. Remember, he had the visa issues, so he didn't really have a preseason, and then he got off to a real slow start. But once he got 10, 12 games in, you know, the veteran kind of got some things going. And look, he helped the Hawks win a hockey game on Saturday mm-hmm. in Columbus. So to get a couple of prospects for him, you know, another guy with an expiring contract, and he wasn't going to be, you weren't going to bring him back, and he wasn't going to be a long-term answer to a quote-unquote championship team. So this, to me, again, checks the make sense box.
You know who's really happy that he was traded away is the Columbus Blue Jackets, because Soderberg, of his seven goals, four of them were against the Columbus Blue Jackets. I agree with you, Pat, and I think what's great here is you get a couple of prospects. One of them was drafted by the Colorado Avalanche. And listen, Soderberg's going back to a place that he played. I think he spent 3 or 4 years with Colorado from a few years back. He was in Arizona most of last year. So there's some familiarity there. He did his job here. He was a healthy scratch at times. But now they're getting back a couple of prospects. And I'm really excited about this Ryder Ralston kid who played at Notre Dame and was drafted by Colorado, and he's the son of Brian Ralston, longtime NHL player, played well over 1,000 games in the NHL. But this kid apparently is a better skater than his dad, maybe not quite as big, but is fleet of foot. And
he's a Detroit kid, so you know.
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't shoot it like his dad, because his dad could wire it. Oh, he could really shoot it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, so I'm looking forward to that. And Dickinson, too. I mean, here's a kid who's, you know, we got to keep in mind, these are young kids and they're still developing. They're still growing. They might be in Rockford for a couple of years. Who knows? But they'll eventually get a taste with the Blackhawks, Jammer.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I think when I look at some of the additions and what they've done, I see a really healthy internal competition developing. I don't think the bottom six were pushed quite as much as they would have liked. There wasn't that fear that there should be, that you could be in and out of the lineup. I think that pushes bottom six players, especially in the first 2 years of their career, to bring it every single day. I think you've seen some dips from some of their younger players in their play, and I think that keeping them, and I'm talking about the Kurashevs, I'm talking about guys that Suter even, you see their game. When you have guys like Connolly that can go up in the lineup, you have guys that can come in and out of the lineup, you bring in a guy like Hinostroza who's a proven guy who can play, now that competition ups the ante to bring it. And so I think that was
a... Less off nights, right?
Yes.
Like, you know, there's because no, if you lack energy, you're going to... Next guy, you're out.
Yeah, there's a guy, there's a next guy, there's a guy waiting. Right. He got bag skated today, and he's gonna step into the lineup. So that fear, if you will, for bottom six, I think is healthy. And it drives the competition. It ups the ante in practice. It brings up the competitiveness out of everybody. And there's a reward system that Jeremy will be able to create an internal competition within his group to play the style he wants to play. I think you have to have that.
The other thing, guys, and, you know, Stan says he doesn't like to draft or trade for players just because of size. But other than Vinny Hinostroza, pretty much to a transaction, the recent players that have come back into the fold have been bigger bodied players. And I think we would all agree when we've watched this team this year against bigger teams, they struggle to get to the front of the net. They struggle to move big bodies out in front of their nets. If you can combine size and skill, that's what wins you rounds in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I kind of like, too, that we got this faster work ethic oriented roster that now they felt like, okay, let's see if we can add some size to it, both on the back end and on the front end. And so some of these moves, I just think they make sense. Again, everything kind of, you kind of see it. Like, sometimes it's hard to get the plan. I kind of see the plan here.
Yeah. You know, getting back to your size comment, it really pays off. And we've seen it in the regular season. They don't play well against Tampa, and Tampa's a bigger team up front. But when you get to the playoffs, I think size really matters there too. And when you get those bigger guys, you get away with more in the playoffs. Referees tend to put their whistles away. So I think that's where it's really going to pay out. But yeah, I agree. It's harder to play against bigger teams, bigger guys. And you look, and, you know, throw Vinny Hinostroza out, but you look at these guys' sizes. They're 6'1" and 6'2", and you know they're beefier, heavier guys. So I like the fact they've gotten bigger and a little heavier too, Jammer.
Yeah, I think it's critical. I think you hit it right on the head, Stevie. It won't show its importance until you're playing meaningful games in the playoffs, because I believe exactly what you're saying, and I've always been saying that the game's rules regress 5 or 6 years at least every playoffs, because that's just refs don't want to become a part of the story, and so they let the guys play a little bit more. And you're going to need heavier, bigger people. And you've seen other teams do it that are right on the cusp of winning, whether it's the Washington Capitals, the Boston Bruins. There's several. Tampa Bay did it a couple of years before they won. You know, beefing up their bottom six with guys that can skate and are big and are hard to play against.
Good stuff, boys, as always. Coming up next on the podcast, our NBCSportsChicago.com insider Charlie Romeliotis joins us. You could win big with NBC Sports Chicago and Coors Light. Just head to NBCSportsChicago.com/sweepstakes to enter. You have a chance to win prizes ranging from a Drizzly discount code or the weekly grand prize that includes an autographed Patrick Sharp Coors Light jersey. Joining us now on the Blackhawks Talk podcast, presented by Coors Light, Blackhawks insider Charlie Romeliotis. All right, Charlie. I was just really impressed how this young team handled such an emotional day, from seeing teammates that they, you know, had gone to war with, moved at the trade deadline, wondering if they are a part of a transaction, changes to the lineup, getting ready to play an important game against Columbus, and then rallying a couple of times against the Blue Jackets. It's a big day for this group, and emotionally they handled it very well.
Yeah, it was a gutsy effort. And then you throw on the fact that Adam Boqvist left on the second shift of the game, and they're essentially playing with five defensemen the entire game. And it was Riley Stillman's team debut, so that was kind of his first game to get acclimated. And Calvin DeHaan got injured and kind of retweaked that hip injury in the second period. So all around, obviously, would we have liked it for it to be prettier? Yes, I'm sure Chicago fans would have loved that. But the fact that they picked up 4 out of 4 points in this Columbus series was crucial, because they needed this kind of momentum going into this road trip.
And it was a big night for newcomers Riley Stillman and Brett Connolly, who enters the lineup for the first time. So, like, Stillman and Kalnuk are out there for Stefan Matteau's first goal. And I think that is a little bit of you know, trying to, you know, get their bearing straight in an, you know, new defensive pairing, and they get beat up the middle on that one. But then you mentioned Boqvist leaves the game early on. He's in concussion protocol. Duncan Keith replaces him on the top power play unit, and Duncan Keith strikes with his second goal of the season, a much needed power play equalizer.
Yeah, slowly but surely, this power play is starting to figure it out. Although it was a little bit disappointing to see them not capitalize on that 5-on-4 or on the 4-minute power play towards the end of the second period and going into the third. But yeah, it's a nice little confidence builder that they were able to convert on special teams again. And for Duncan Keith to be out there too. And even Brett Connolly obviously got out there on the second unit as well. So yeah, it was nice to see the power play get another goal and try to carry some momentum into this final stretch of the year.
Line A has had a really disappointing season, but he had a huge game against the Blackhawks. You know, he gives them that 2-1 lead in that second period. The Hawks were just 1-14 this season when trailing after two. And they end up getting the equalizer, Kane setting up Kurashev. And if you watch the broadcast, Eddie Olczyk pointed out how maybe a high stick led to the turnover. But this also could be the hockey gods evening up things, taking a goal off the board for a quick whistle.
Yeah, I was just going to say that was a pretty quick whistle by the officials to take away that goal. And it was a crucial goal, too, because it was tied 1-1. It would have put the Blackhawks up 2-1. And, of course, minutes later, Line A scores that goal to make it 2-1. And so now the Blackhawks are chasing. And I know they obviously scored the next two goals in the third period to kind of retake that lead to go up 3-2. But it would have maybe changed the complexion of the game a little bit, and would have put the Blue Jackets on their heels. And you know, who knows how the game would have unfolded after that.
So the game is 2-2, and the Hawks end up taking the lead. Let's talk about Brett Connolly, because, you know, when the deal went down, those that were kind of in the Florida Panthers camp were like, the Hawks are absorbing a bad contract. And then when we were listening to, you know, Stan and the Hawks talk about it, it's like, we're getting a guy who is a major contributor to the Washington Capitals, winning a Stanley Cup a couple of years ago. And it just maybe wasn't working out. Maybe he was in Joel's doghouse, what have you. We talked to him after tonight's game, after he comes away with the takeaway with Roslovic draped on him, does a nice job extending and keeping the puck away from his body, and then shooting, you know, moving right, shooting left, and getting the goal. That was just his third goal of the year. He had 2 goals and 2 assists in 21 games with Florida. And you could tell he was kind of seething. Like, he didn't want to say too much in the postgame presser about how this year just wasn't working in Florida. But it was clear things were not working in Florida, and he wanted out of there. And in his first game as a Blackhawk, he pays huge dividends.
Yeah, not only through his words, but you can just see it visually, like how frustrated he was, and how I think he said, I'm honored to be wearing this Blackhawk sweater like 3 times in his first statement as a Chicago. So, yeah, it was nice to see. And I was guilty of it, too. I'm sure a lot of other Chicago media members were, of saying, you know, the Blackhawks acquired Brett Connolly's contract, because I think we were associating the fact that, okay, here the Blackhawks get Riley Stillman and Henrik Bjorkstrom, and even Florida kind of took it that way too. It was like, oh, Florida's clearing this cap space off their book for a larger deal. So the contract was associated with the player the entire time. And so it's cool that we talked to obviously Stan Bowman to the trade deadline. And a lot of people were like, is this mean the Blackhawks are waving the white flag on this year? And it's like, well, they also, in addition to acquiring these future assets, they acquired guys like Connolly and Hinostroza, where they're still having pieces for this year. And Connolly is one of those guys that maybe we didn't expect to be one of those pieces, but he obviously made a big impact in his first game.
All right, I gotta ask you your reaction to Patrick Laine's second goal, because my phone was blowing up from let's just say not exactly the biggest NHL fans going, what in the F did I just see? End to end, coast to coast, sweet move at the end, great finish. You wonder where this version of Patrick Laine has been all season.
Yeah, it feels like the only two players that score those types of goals are Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon. And you could maybe even throw in Patrick Kane in there. And so we obviously recognize, or we know Patrick Laine for his lethal shot, but I didn't know he had that in him. Like, I didn't know but I will say it kind of puts it into perspective a little bit. So the fact that Jeremy Colliton said afterwards that Calvin DeHaan had tweaked his hip, and he was the guy that got turned over on that defense. So anyways, I don't know if that necessarily played a huge role, but yeah, it was a pretty nasty goal for Patrick Laine, who is for some reason, a Blackhawks killer this year.
And credit Kevin Lankinen in some key stops at key times with 2:11 to go. He made a big time save on Roslovic to get this thing to overtime. Then we go to overtime. I thought Doc had a rough game. And you know, he almost had a boo-boo that cost him right at the end, but like a lot of guys on this team, he made amends, you know, within the same game. That's part of this season, right? Seeing a second year player who, you know, is in his seventh game, whatever it is for Doc. Let me check. Ninth game tonight was his ninth game. So, I mean, again, he hasn't had a lot to ramp up. He enters in a high leverage, high pressure situation in the thick of a playoff race. And on the ice, 3-on-3 hockey, we had two rookies, a second year, we had three rookies because you had Lankinen and Nett. And, you know, I it was great to see Doc make a nice pass to Brandon Hagel. Kalnuk does a nice job driving to the net to also help Doc with a passing lane to get it over to Hagel. And then Hagel, you could see and hear in his post-game remarks, he was happy that this goal came off a shot. He goes, like, I've been hearing you guys. I've you know, not much you're going to say that gets past me. But it was great to see so much youth come together and put this one in the win column for the Hawks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to get back to something you said about Kevin Lankinen at the beginning. There have been times in the past several games where maybe at the end of the night, his stat line doesn't look very great. Like, it'll have maybe a sub 900 save percentage, but you point to a few timely saves that he had within the game that maybe kept the Blackhawks in it. And there were a lot of those moments. I know there weren't a ton of high danger chances, but there were a lot of those moments where you felt like Kevin Lankinen made some key stops. And maybe in the first half of the year, we looked at Kevin Lankinen as a guy that was stealing wins for the Blackhawks, but this, it feels like he's keeping them in games, and it's allowing the Blackhawks to come away with these 2 points.
So it's going to be interesting if Boqvist is in concussion protocol for any period of time. It looks to me like Calvin DeHaan's going to have to sit out a little while, seeing as he had the hip pointer in the last game and he wasn't close to being 100% on Monday night, missed some shifts as well. So that would leave the door open for Zadorov to enter the lineup, who, by the way, was a healthy scratch. And man, you know, Jeremy did not mix his words at all afterwards, saying, look, for a long period of time, they like what they saw from Nikita. But recently they haven't, and they hoped this would send a message. And it was also on the same day that, as we watch NHL Network and Sportsnet in Canada on trade deadline day, his name was still being mentioned as a possible candidate to be moved. So a lot for Zadorov to kind of comprehend and absorb. But I'm sure we'll see him in the lineup on Thursday night against Detroit.
Yeah, and you hope, obviously, Calvin DeHaan isn't out for too long. Maybe the silver lining is the fact that the Blackhawks do have their next game isn't until Thursday, so maybe he can recover, take those two extra days to recover. But, yeah, with the Zadorov, I think it was interesting, too, because you didn't know. Obviously, it felt like a healthy – obviously, going into the game, it felt like a healthy scratch, but you didn't know how much of that was – you know, maybe his name was just in the rumor mill and they didn't want to serve as a distraction. And so that was a good opportunity to get Riley Stillman in to kind of let Zadorov breathe a little bit. Now, I would say this is probably an opportunity for the Blackhawks to go to 11 forwards and 7 defensemen, given how the last two games have gone with Calvin DeHaan getting injured in the second period. It feels like they've been playing with 5 defensemen for the last two games. But they just traded Madison Bowie. They don't have Lucas Carlson anymore. And so I don't know if the Blackhawks active roster would be, you know, I don't know if they have enough defensemen to roll 11 and 7, but on the contrary, you know, if you do roll 11 and seven, who's coming out of the lineup? Because Brett Connolly is a guy that just scored, you know, in his team debut. So we'll see what they do on Thursday.
All right. We had Jammer and Steve break down the trade deadline day in our opening segment of this podcast, but I'd like your take on it as well. A really hectic day for Stan Bowman, and this coming after he already made the two moves with Florida, made 4 separate trades, Janmark, Soderberg, Highmore, and as you mentioned, Bowie, all moved, and some young players acquired and some big time draft picks also. What was your takeaway from Stan Bowman and the Blackhawks trade deadline day?
Yeah, it felt like they upgraded or added draft picks, right? With the Madison Bowie trade specifically, they upgraded their 5th rounder to a 4th rounder just because they traded Madison Bowie. Or with the Matthias Janmark move, it was getting a 2nd rounder and then moving a 5th rounder, but upgrading that to a 3rd rounder. So it felt like they were kind of moving up the draft class. And then they also got some prospects. We've talked about Henrik Bjorkstrom, who's probably the prized player of that deal, but I mean, given how Riley Stillman played in this game, it feels like he could be an impact type player for them moving forward. And then even just getting something for Carl Soderberg, I think the rights to Ryder Rolston, he's probably the guy that they were eyeing the most, I guess, because he's at Notre Dame and he's playing with Landon Slaggart, who's one of their prospects. But I mean, overall, like, I don't think that the Blackhawks necessarily hit a home run, but like, I think this was a win for them because I didn't expect them to be able to get a 2nd round pick for Janmark, given that his play had dipped over the last 10 games. And not only did they do that, but they acquired a 3rd rounder too, while giving up that 5th. So I thought it was a win for the Blackhawks. They didn't necessarily swing big or swing for the fences, hit a home run, but it was a win.
I thought it was a fantastic day, and I think it's been a fantastic trade deadline period. And again, we don't know, you evaluate these a year or two or 3 or 4 down the road when you assess what those draft picks turned into. But at first blush, like you said, if it came to an acquiring a player, I see where they were going. You know, like, to me, I have seen upgrades with the moves that they have made, the two moves they made with Florida prior to the deadline, and then the moves they made on deadline day. I mean, when you see what Taylor Hall got in return for his acquisition, a 2nd round pick. Now, Hall did have a no trade clause, so there probably was a better offer than Boston had on the table. But that being said, there weren't a lot of 1st round picks moving on trade deadline day at all. And so to see the Hawks get a 2nd rounder for Janmark, a guy who had 1 point in his last 10 games, to see them get a couple of prospects for Soderberg, I thought the Highmore deal is really intriguing. Because think about it. You know, after the bubble, Charlie, we had Jeremy on, we had Stan on, and Matthew Highmore was kind of like the poster child of how Jeremy wanted his team to play you know, this season that we're currently in, you know, the work ethic, setting up the next shift, short shifts. And he played well in that bubble. 4 points, I think he had in the 9 games. And it was interesting that, like, he quickly became the 13th forward, you know, that he was getting sacked quite a bit. And I understand where they're going with adding Adam Gaudette. To me, obviously a much more higher offensive ceiling than Highmore. And this might be one of those change of scenery type of things that it just didn't fit where Vancouver had him. They moved him to wing. They weren't happy with what he was doing at center. We'll see. That, you know, they scouted him a lot when he was a teammate of Dylan Sakura. So to me, I think what you said, everything they did made sense to me. And I can't say I always, and you know, you and I are two schmoes watching hockey games and trying to assess things. So what we say isn't gospel by any means, but like, I get where they were going and seemingly get where they're trying to get to. And to me, things lined up and made sense with all the moves.
Right. Yeah. It's really the total pack. It seemed like every deal made sense, right? It wasn't like, you're scratching your head, like wondering, okay, is there another piece to this puzzle? Like the Adam Gaudette trade obviously set the tone for the day too, because like you said, Pat, he's got offensive upside. Like he won the Hobey Baker in college. Like he can be a high end player, and maybe he didn't get that opportunity in Vancouver. Whereas Matthew Highmore, to me, he's a fourth line guy. Like that's who he is at the NHL level, and that's who he always is going to be, which is fine. That's not a knock on him, but that's just what his role is. Whereas Gaudette, it seemed like, I think he spoke to a Vancouver radio station, or maybe it was talking in his post-trade press conference, basically said he wants to play higher in the lineup, and Vancouver wasn't giving him that opportunity. So we'll see if the Blackhawks kind of give him that fair shot, similar to what they did with Vinny Hinostroza when he said, I just want a fair shot here.
So Hawks within 2 points of Nashville. They got a couple nights off, so they'll be scoreboard watching here over the next couple of days. And then it's two against the Detroit Red Wings. They moved Mantha. But as we just saw with Columbus, they had three or four key players moved or injured in the last 72 hours. And they gave the Hawks all they could handle, you know, including losing their captain, which to me is a gut punch that, you know, a lot of teams, they start making their tee times for the off season when things like that happen. And as we saw, they gave the Hawks pretty much everything they could handle in both games.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't sleep on Detroit, because if you look at their last two wins, Carolina and Tampa Bay, like those are the trap games, like where you think you can go into that game and you think you can coast and maybe win on your B game. Detroit's not there for that. Like Detroit will play hard, and that's their, they might not have the talent level to compete with all these other teams, but they're trying to instill a culture in there that basically what the Blackhawks are trying to instill. Like, we're going to be a hardworking team, and we're going to try to win battles, win 50-50s. And that's how we're going to beat the opposition, because we're not going to beat them on talent. So this is crucial. I know the Blackhawks have success against Detroit this year, but they cannot overlook this series, because this is, you look at Detroit and what they've done against Carolina and Tampa over the last two wins, and those are the losses that you're going to go back to at the end of the season. If you miss out on a point or two, you're going to point to those.
You can catch Charlie's work on the My Teams app. You can follow him on Twitter at C Romeliotis. He does the best work in the business covering the Chicago Blackhawks. Great stuff, Charlie. We'll talk to you later on in the week.
Thanks, PB. Enjoy your off day.
Thanks. My thanks to Steve Conroy and Jamal Mayers for joining us earlier, breaking down trade deadline day. We thank you for listening as always. That's a recap of the Blackhawks Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Don't forget to rate us, and we'll catch you next time on the Blackhawks Talk podcast.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know, with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer,
It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.